The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The situation in Haiti is so desperate that gangs in the country announced a ceasefire to help, or at least not hinder, in the relief effort. More than 2,200 people have died since last week's earthquake. The 7.2 tremor left more than 12,000 people injured and destroyed over 52,000 homes. Haiti's gangs had been hijacking aid trucks and ambulances, making relief work extremely difficult. Some aid agencies have resorted to helicopters to move supplies. Meanwhile, the USS Arlington arrived in the country over the weekend, bringing doctors, nurses, medical supplies, two helicopters, as well as 200 Marines.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logminas in for Drew today. He's taking the day off. We have a lot to cover with what you know is a lot going on in the world. You just heard CBS reporting on conditions in Haiti. Things continue to be so terrible for Haiti. And meanwhile, you've heard probably about the blasts in Kabul. And some of our military service members were killed in that. And we're still getting incoming information about that. But we're going to be on top of that and at the bottom of the hour with San Francisco Archbishop Corleone on some American students and other Americans with them in Afghanistan. And what efforts are being made to get them out, because they are currently still there and trying to get out. So we're kind of trying to span the globe and cover for you what's very important, what's happening for Americans, what's happening for people all over the world. Today is the birthday of Mother Teresa of Calcutta. We'll get to that with Mother Mary Catherine. It's going to be an important look at lessons we all need to learn. Look at the life she devoted and her sisters do all over the world, and the pandemic's impact on child welfare. I mean, we have a lot to cover today. I'm glad to be in again. Drew's out just for today. I'm in. I'm Sheila Logminas. We're going to get right to it because there's a lot of news going on in the world we want to cover. So again, Haiti and Afghanistan and students in Afghanistan. I've got Catherine Lopez coming up after the chaplet as well. She and I always love to talk about it's of a piece, all of a piece, our faith and what's going on in the world and what we can do to apply our faith to what's going on in the world while we handle those things. Very much those who are starving, the poor and needing food, impact on them of the aid organizations and how we carry all of that out as the people of God. So on Haiti, the people there, as you know, are still very much struggling after the earthquake 2 weeks ago. According to NPR, aid is only just now getting to remote regions of that southern peninsula where the earthquake hit. The terrain there is very mountainous. The roads are mostly dirt, and many of those are now blocked by landslides. U.S. military helicopters, you may have seen some of this on news, and maybe some of that news isn't getting covered anymore because it gets deflected by other urgencies like Afghanistan. But U.S. military helicopters are finally getting to those areas of Haiti, NPR said, and they're landing only on the large space available, the town's soccer field. Many of their concrete block houses have collapsed, and their subsistence farming isn't giving them enough to live on right now. There are also no hospitals or other medical facilities around. Can you imagine? And the many injured have no place to get medical attention. That means that simple things like a broken bone or a splinter could, you know, you get hit by wood that has hit your skin and now it's in your arm or your leg, and it could become a lot worse with an infection if it's not removed, but there's no place to go. Particularly hard hit were foster homes where orphans were living. Many of those have collapsed, and the charity Save the Children is concerned that the children who live in them, who are now forced to the streets, will become targets for child sex trafficking. As you know, Relevant Radio committed to giving 10% of whatever was raised in the last pledge drive for relief to Haiti. Because of your generosity, we were able to send $300,000 for that. One of the organizations benefiting from your donations, your generosity, is Food for the Poor. Jezebel Garcia-Pedroso is the Senior Program Manager of Disaster Response for the organization, and Delaine Bailey is the Church Alliance's Development Manager, and formerly the Haiti Country Projects Manager. We have a lot to talk about, so I'm glad both of you are here. Jezebel, let's start with you. Thank you both for taking the time to be with us. How much aid, this is important for us to know, how much aid is getting out to the people of Haiti right now, and is it enough?
Thank you for having us. Right now, so Food for the Poor has been in Haiti for 35 years, and we are consistently sending in goods throughout the year. And we had not only pre-positioned disaster relief kits, but also were able to dispatch right away within 24 hours. We had seven truckloads headed to the affected departments of NIPS, Food, and Grand Anne. Additionally, we have distribution centers in those three departments, as well as all the rest of the departments in Haiti. And immediately, anything in the Grand Anne, Sud, NIPS were distributed out from those, as long as we made sure everybody was safe and our families mm-hmm. that support us there are safe. And so far, we've been able to get out 44 truckloads into oh, the wow. area, into the three, specifically the three departments. Of course, we know there are certain areas that are still blocked because of major roads, but we're trying to come up with every possible solution. So even if that means we get it to as close as possible before a bridge, is compromised, we take it there by carload, motorcycle, whatever we have to do, we're trying to do our best to get in aid as quickly as possible.
It's so hard to imagine how you do that in those conditions. I said in setting up our conversation here, those are such terrible conditions. We only see snapshots that the news media can give us from where they point their cameras, Jezebel, but I can only imagine how hard it was to get 44 truckloads. I mean, I'm not even sure what roads are they using? It's just that it's been cut off.
I know we have an incredible team in Haiti, logistics and longstanding partners on the ground really is our strength. And we do this through churches. Church communities are really there for communities because people know that they can depend on the church, not just for aid, but also spirituality to get them through. So 44 truckloads is a lot. We help and support through churches, through homes that we support, orphanages, homes, and also hospitals. So within 24 hours, the truck was on its way, and two of those truckloads were for the General Hospital in Lakai, which we also understand might need to be evacuated because of structural damages, not just from the main earthquake, but many aftershocks that still continue.
In fact, that's the thing. I mean, so there are the earthquakes, and then along came a tropical storm, and I feel so bad. And for how many we've lost track with the pandemic, how long ago it was or how recent it was that Haiti got so devastated in one of those in a hurricane. So I just feel, oh my gosh, Haiti, it's right in the path of so much devastation. So I'll get back to you in a moment on what the relief efforts are, Jezebel. But Delaine, or either of you can speak to this. How are people responding spiritually when you think of these back-to-back disasters? And I mean real life-threatening existential disasters, what people are currently living through. Delaine, how are people responding spiritually?
First of all, I just want to thank you so much for having us and just to let both you and your listeners know that Relevant Radio, your partnership with us is priceless. And, as you so adequately laid the foundation for us before we began talking, and Jezebel has shared lots of the logistics, the spiritual component is so, so vital for the holistic care of the human being. And at Food for the Poor, we have a culture of prayer. And in fact, tonight we are going to be praying. We're going to be praying for the people of Haiti again from 6 o'clock till 7 p.m. tonight. It's going to be live on Facebook Live and YouTube. And the churches have come together. We have prayed. The people of Haiti, we're constantly praying for them. And they're gathering themselves and praying. And as Jezebel said, that we depend on the churches here in the first world, And we also depend on the churches there. And pastors are gathering their people. They're praying. And the fact that we are providing such essential needs, essential products to the pastors, it's literally empowering them. And they're able to, as a result of that, see the hand of God and see answers to the things that they have prayed and be able to share that strength and hope with their people and their community.
So on that note, it's a both and thing. We know prayer is more powerful than we probably will ever know on this side of the veil of life, but it's certainly very powerful. And then, as you say, that you what you're doing, this kind of aid, both the physical, you're there physically, you're providing aid and relief and the prayer relief. And also the spirit, physical and spiritual. So the food and then whatever medical supplies can get in. And the prayer campaign that's going on, even this evening, you know, you're providing that for people to join you in prayer in many ways. But when you do that for the pastors, they can help the people, and therefore that sustains the people as well as the food. But then back to you, Jezebel, for a moment, then getting these to even reach those pastors, to help, to talk to them, to provide for them and ask them what their people need. How are we kind of go over this a little bit, but how are you reaching, finding who is in need, where they are, and then trying to get there?
You know, that really goes by the years that we've been developing these connections. They're able to quickly use communication to get, you know, the needs list from the pastors, from the various church networks that we work with. I mean, on Saturday, hours, not even hours after the earthquake hit, our leadership was meeting in a situation room. And that's what they were doing, connecting with the church partners, the pastors, the clergy, what's going on the ground, connecting with the hospitals, also starting the routes. What are they hearing? What bridges were might have been impacted, landslides? This all took place Saturday to be able to map the route for that first convoy of trucks that departed on Sunday. And then we've been able to successfully continue additional convoys, of course, making sure that roads are safe, that our truck drivers are safe, and connecting with the coordination of mechanisms. We have great connections also with the government and understanding what is going on the ground with other partners, right? Other NGOs, that's so crucial, especially Christian organizations on the ground that are doing great work and providing access to water. So we're working together, united in God's work. It's every day we have to assess, right? It might be that all of a sudden the one area got rains and the landslide turns into a mudslide, and we just have to figure out another route. But we always know that God puts this little light of miracle and we make it happen. Mission impossible with God, but we make it happen.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And both of you, Delaine, if you want to jump in at any moment, but because this is a three-way conversation, and for you out there as well, 888-914-9149 is the number. But so let's talk about this for a moment, because some people may wonder this, and we want to address everything and be upfront. There have been criticisms in the past about certain countries becoming aid dependent, and that aid like this can cause a certain kind of inertia on the part of the local people who sit, sort of wait for it to come without taking initiative themselves. I mean, it's hard to imagine that in Haiti. And yet some people may wonder, is that a possibility, or are the poor Haitians just so slammed by disasters that's not going to happen there?
You know, the Haitians have been slammed, and you can list that. You could talk about the rise in COVID cases. You could talk about the gang violence. You could talk about the climatic conditions, the 2010 earthquake, and then right after that, the tropical storms. In fact, where this current earthquake happened is right along the path of Matthew in 2016. But we understand as an organization that poverty has so many different levels. And so as a result, we as an organization, we're gearing for the holistic, we're doing a holistic approach. So we're dealing with the aspects of education and, you know, we work across a whole spectrum, the relief, the rehabilitation, and the development. So the relief is what we're doing right now, this emergency situation. The rehabilitation is the provision of housing, access to clean water, food, medical, education, multi-purpose centers, and such the like. And then we step into the development. And these are programs and transformational solutions which allow people to become holistic and help to break the cycle of poverty. And they're taught how to grow crops and how to care for it and how to develop certain things that will cause them to, we call them income generating projects, that will help them to break the cycle of poverty, and how to use their gifts and their skills and develop that to help to make a livelihood. So as an organization, as Jezebel said, we've been in Haiti for 37 years. We understand the lay of the land. We understand the culture. And so we're trying to utilize those avenues to get people out of poverty so they don't become dependent.
This is exactly what so many micro economic opportunity organizations are trying to do in countries like this. It's a wonderful thing to see organizations be able to go into regions like this and help people help themselves. So it's again the hand up, and not only the hand out, but right now they need the hand extended to them with food, with medical supplies. We talked about food, food for the poor. What about medical supplies and the medical relief they need with those who are in the medical field and can give the relief themselves, and bringing in also the medical supplies?
So at Food for the Poor, we have wonderful U.S. partners that are able to present to us in in-kind donations, medicine, medical supplies. A lot of that, because of our work in Haiti, was already on the ground. So the first convoy on Sunday had two trucks headed to the General Hospital of Lakai, and we've continued additional trucks as long as, you know, we make sure that the hospital is running. Many other organizations have stepped in to form sort of medical tents outside because, like I mentioned, General Hospital of Lakai may need to be fully evacuated because of structural damages. But we know because of those partnerships, right, we're getting in that aid. The biggest concern right now, just as it was in 2010, is the need for anesthesia. Why operations, right, orthopedic supplies, orthopedic surgeons. And so we're working with a few other organizations here, but we know that so many are providing that alongside Food for the Poor in terms of equipment, medicines, and supplies on the ground.
Oh, thank goodness. So you've got this covered. Tell us sort of your personal stories, both of you, Delaine and Jezebel. You're giving us important facts. You're giving us the important information of what you're doing and your organizations are doing. But, you know, what are the sort of the anecdotal? I always love to ask people the sights, the sounds, the feel. What are you hearing? What are you seeing? What are the one-on-one personal human stories? Because I think, you know, one trip, it was by boat, of course, but I got to see just one little tiny piece of Haiti, got off the boat, was able to see people there, and I loved being able to support some of their, you know, the local crafts they make and sell there and so forth. But you think of these people going back to their homes, and now I think of them devastated like this. What can you tell us about that human interaction?
One of the things that excites me, even as I sit here, is the fact that we have in our Port-au-Prince office, we have 400 Haitian staff that's employed by Food for the Poor. Many of them were intimately impacted by the 2010 earthquake. Mm-hmm. But because of our generous donors, our generous partners on this side in the first world, you are empowering those 400 Haitian staff members or team members to be able to give back and to empower their own people. And this is really what's exciting. We tell the story of one person, and I could call her name, Soraya Lewis, who was, she's a member of our team in Haiti, and she herself was trapped under the rubble of the 2010 earthquake and was miraculously rescued. Despite the resurfacing of the traumatic memories of those days, she is currently on the field bringing about meeting the needs of those and inspiring us with her strength and her compassion, and telling her fellow people who are suffering that hope is on the way. Uh-huh. You know, so we have these strong heroes. We have these heroes that are on the ground ministering to their very, very own people. I was just thinking today of a project that we just completed, giving clean water to a community in Cavayan. Just a couple days before the earthquake, they had gone and captured the completion of that project. And there was a 65-year-old woman there who told her story. She said, for 65 years, all my life I've been carrying water. I've been going to the waterfall to get water, to the water hole to get water. 65-year-old woman, and she's saying, today I celebrate because of the generosity of Food for the Poor. Oh. I can have clean water in clean access, in ready access to me. And she said, I don't have gold, I don't have silver to give, but what I have to give is my thanks. And I wondered, what happened to that project? Is that because they've had so many aftershocks, and that very village was impacted. And thank goodness we found out that that water project is still intact. But being in the field, we've had such wonderful personal experiences with so many transformational opportunities.
You know, this is transformational. Just sounds wonderful. Opportunities. We want opportunities for everything, especially transformation for the people of Haiti. I know we're really low on time. I know people are wondering if what they can do. Say some of the children may be orphaned. Is there? I know on your website, foodforthepoor.com, you have the power of faith there, the importance of prayer, but also and the meals provided, the homes built, the containers shipped of food. But many things can be done, including sponsoring a child or even, so some people wonder, what about adopting children, fostering children, sponsoring children? How does that happen?
Well, Food for the Poor is not currently involved in that adopting of children, but we do have homes in Haiti through our Angels of Home project or programs, where there are orphanages run by Haitians, and in those homes, children are adequately cared for. They're given meals, they're given medical, they're given education, they're given the supplies that they need to be able to grow up and be healthy. And so that is also available that you can find on our website. Right now, as it relates to the emergency, the earthquake, the crisis, there is a need for pallets of medical supplies to be taken into that country. And so you could go on our website and donate to be able to provide clean water, to provide food and medicine. And then we have to begin to look after the assessment is done in the long-term rebuilding of this nation. That's going to need to happen soon.
Oh, and people can follow that and everything else you're saying at foodforthepoor.org, foodforthepoor.org, all one word, if you will. And you can see there are some beautiful faces of smiling, happy children, I mean, eating, playing with balloons and just being delighted by that in poor Haiti, so devastated by back-to-back crises. Thank you both so much, Jezebel and Delaine. Thank you for coming in and sharing this with us. Thank all of you for your donations to Relevant Radio, which help us donate to the people of Haiti. More coming up next.
This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logminas in for Drew today. He's taking the day off. Lots to cover with crises around the world, emergencies happening right now. You've probably been hearing or seeing the headlines out of Kabul. And around the Kabul airport, especially, there was a bombing, and it has now, the death count of our own military members is up to 12. I'm very sorry to say there's that going on there while there are Americans trying to make their way to the Kabul airport, or maybe they're just outside of it, trying to get in to get on a plane to be evacuated. Among them, just to let you know, you may not have heard about this. There are at least, just to give you, I don't know, the human story behind this and making it very personal, there are at least 24 San Diego County students and 16 parents stranded in Afghanistan and unable to get to the airport in Kabul after a summer trip to visit relatives. Don't know exactly their location right now, nor what's happening with them, but that those families in East County, California, are among thousands of individuals waiting to leave the country that has continually devolved into more and more chaos amid the U.S. pullout of troops after 20 years of occupation there, as you know. But right now, they're trying to get out, and then this bombing at the Kabul airport. And things are developing by, it seems, the minute, if not the hour. We have a little bit of audio. Let's hear that.
We are getting an emerging picture of what happened this morning. U.S. officials and foreign officials filling in some details for us. What looks like transpired here are two separate bombing attacks, two suicide bombers at two different locations, as well as gunmen involved in this attack as well, which U.S. officials are calling a complex attack. One at the Abbey Gate, that is the gate of the airport itself. The other one, suicide bomber, apparently at the Baron Hotel. And if you look at a map of the airport, the Baron Hotel is located just blocks away from the airport gate itself. So very nearby, this sort of an airport hotel that's right in that same area, also struck in a bombing attack today. Not clear how many casualties there are. The Russian government is reporting now 13 people were killed and 15 wounded. That is from the Russian Foreign Ministry. That is not supported by the U.S. side just yet. So emerging numbers in terms of the scale of the damage of this attack.
You are hearing the scale of the attack on the Kabul airport today. So many people have been hurt, injured, killed, and including 12 members of the American military. We're getting that count all the time. The latest updates are just horrific to think about this. And as I was saying, there are at least 24 San Diego County students and 16 parents stranded in Afghanistan. The families are from the Cajon Valley Union School District in East County, and they're among thousands of individuals waiting to leave that country. The superintendent of those schools, the district's director of family and community engagement, said the children range from preschoolers to high school students. They said the students, you're wondering, well, why did they go there with this happening? Well, the students went there on summer break with their families to visit extended family members they have there. We'll talk more about that in a moment, but we have another clip. Let's listen to this.
Some of the casualties, civilian casualties, it seems, taken away in wheelbarrows from the site of this attack, taken by eyewitnesses there. You can see the injuries. It also gives you a sense of where this attack took place. This is a corridor, in effect, leading into the airport. It is a very confined corridor, and those kinds of corridors, number one, they put people in a very confined space, makes for a very easy target for terrorists, but two, it could also accentuate the effects of explosives because it's in a confined space. That is something terrorists are aware of. It's something that terrorists take advantage of.
Advantage of it because we know of the attack on the Kabul airport right now today that's happened. But meanwhile, leading up to today, there have been efforts to get Americans out, as you know. And among them, as I've been telling you, are some from California and a group of at least 24 San Diego County students and 16 parents stranded in Afghanistan. We know Afghanistan is just an absolute mess. Most Americans don't have a personal stake in it because most of us don't know Afghans. We do feel the human stake in this, but Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione does have a personal stake in it on two fronts. One is a group from his archdiocese called Roots of Peace. They're from San Rafael, and they were working in Afghanistan to remove landmines around towns and villages. Very heroic work, so the people there could start using the land for farming. Their Afghan employees are now stuck because of this debacle, and it's not known if they'll be able to get out. The other group is that group of 24 children and 16 parents from El Cajon down near San Diego, where the Archbishop is originally from. He had cousins who lived there and went to high school there. The group is of Afghan descent, and they were, as I said just a few moments ago, there for the summer to visit relatives. Archbishop Corleone is with us now. Archbishop, thank you for taking time to be here. It must be an extremely busy time for you.
Oh, yes, it is. There's so much happening, and this Afghanistan situation is so distressing. And as you mentioned, it hits close to home for me.
Well, it does hit close to home, and we know that. And those out there who didn't, Archbishop Corleone, we're telling them right now, you not only does it hit close to home to you, you put out a couple of days ago, I think, you put out a statement on the Archdiocese of San Francisco website, and you said that you had just gotten off the phone with the founder of the San Rafael-based Roots of Peace. Again, it's a nonprofit that works in Afghanistan to remove landmines. That's so heroic. That's such heroic work. And use that ground to help local farmers grow produce and lift them out of poverty. So this group, Roots of Peace, Archbishop Corleone, was doing a great corporal work of mercy. We know that in the church. Now they have to leave. What's the latest you can tell us on whether or not they can get their Afghan employees out or even themselves?
Well, first of all, this is a stellar organization. I got to know them, of course, since I came here to San Francisco. I toured their headquarters in San Rafael, which is in our archdiocese in Marin County. And they're doing amazing work all around the country, removing landmines and then replacing it with vines and other produce to lift the people out of poverty. They have 360 Afghan employees in Afghanistan. They're trying to get out. Now, I spoke with Heidi Kuhn, the CEO, yesterday. She was in Istanbul with her husband. They're imploring the government officials to do something to help get these people out. They had only a few hours. I haven't received an update since, so I don't really know what the situation is now. But they're asking for prayers and for donations as well.
And I can imagine the need. At least they were able to reach you and ask for prayers, and now maybe that communication's been cut off. But Archbishop Corleone, you put in your statement on the San Francisco Archdiocese website that the Roots of Peace compound was overrun by the Taliban. That was even before the latest attack. The Roots of Peace and their workers. They have hundreds of Afghan employees who are stranded, and that organization has been given just hours, and that was like a day ago or so, to get them out of the country. If they fail, you write, many innocents will be murdered. We really worry for their safety. The Americans in Roots of Peace and their Afghan employees, and now with this bombing, we worry all the more. Those who were about to be evacuated, what's going to become of them? Maybe just outside the walls of the airport, the troops were trying to bring them in, or maybe already inside. This is so devastating. We want to pray. You call for prayer for the students out there and the Roots of Peace organization. Are you literally getting not only hourly, but maybe by minute by minute updates from there? Are you getting nothing right now?
I'm getting nothing. I spoke with the CEO yesterday. I'm sure she's overwhelmed, right. Focused on trying to get her people out. So she's not able to give me updates directly. So I haven't, like I said, I haven't heard anything since. I don't know what the situation is.
Archbishop Corleone, you also say in your statement on the San Francisco Archdiocese website, this crisis unfolding in Afghanistan as we speak is unspeakably sad and horrifying. It's also unspeakably urgent that we call in solidarity for action by the U.S. government to protect these people. You call, Archbishop, for all of our national political leaders to do whatever they can. The group Roots of Peace requests donations to help, as you said, Archbishop, and prayers. And rootsofpeace.org is where people can go for the prayers and the donations. And for all Catholics, you call on all Catholics for urgent prayers to Our Lady of Sorrows on behalf of these workers. How can we direct both donations and prayers? Well, you got rootsofpeace.org. Prayers. What specifically do you name Our Lady of Sorrows? That does seem to be the right title of Our Lady right now to direct our prayers.
Yes. Pray to Our Lady, pray the Rosary, pray before the Blessed Sacrament, fast. We need to engage our spiritual resources very much at this time. And then financial resources as well. As again, you said, rootsofpeace.org is the website. People can make a financial donation there as well.
Archbishop Corleone, you're having a prayer service on Friday, right, for this whole situation. Can people join you in that?
Yes, this is a part of our effort of a litany of reparation of abuses against the Blessed Sacrament. So, yes, they are invited to join us Friday at 3 o'clock Pacific time. So they can sign up to join us there at Eucharistic Renaissance. Where they could sign up to join in the .com, where they can join in this litany to the Blessed Sacrament. This is another issue, but it all has to do with the loss of the sense of the sacred, right? Sense of
right.
The sacredness of human life, sense of the sacred of the Blessed Sacrament, our Lord present among us. So it's in reparation for abuses against the Blessed Sacrament at the EucharisticRenaissance.com.
EucharisticRenaissance.com. And again, Archbishop Corleone said he's going to be leading a prayer service on Friday for all of this, all of the chaos, all of the devastation, and all of the violence at EucharisticRenaissance.com. You can join him live 3 p.m. Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific time. Of course, that's 5 Central, and that's 6 Eastern time. Archbishop, that's what you leave us with. The rootsofpeace.org, place where people can go help. And also the information is there for what they need. And then your call to us to pray to Our Lady of Sorrows. And lastly, when you talk about, you know, having relatives from the area where these students are from who are stranded over there, you've mentioned that real quick before you go. I know you're in touch with them. What are you hearing from them?
Well, I haven't heard much. I mean, that was a long time ago when my cousins were going there, but it's
right.
I spent a lot of time in El Cajon. I lived there for a while when I was the auxiliary bishop in the diocese there. I still have relatives there, so mm-hmm. I know the area well. And and obviously I don't know the families who are there, but it, mm-hmm. it feels close to home for me because it's familiar ground to me. I can't imagine what they're going through at this time.
Oh, we all can't. And you, in your statement on the San Francisco Archdiocese website, you say, "I ask for your prayers that these American children who are stuck right now in Afghanistan will be rescued from grave danger along with their parents and chaperones." And again, Archbishop, I have to tell anybody just tuning in, Archbishop Corleone is talking about the students and Roots of Peace organization stuck in Afghanistan trying to get out. And now with the bombing in Kabul, that's made much harder even than it already was. But they are from his area in California. And Archbishop, you have called on all of us to pray to Our Lady of Sorrows on behalf of the students and their parents stuck there, as well as Roots of Peace organization and their employees who work so nobly to clear the landmines and help the people of the locals farm. So,
yes, their own work. And effective.
Amen. Oh, and it noble work and very effective. And now with this happening, it's just dreadful. Your calls to, last thing, this just occurred to me. You've called on members of government. Are you in touch with any members of government?
I know the CEO, Heidi, I know, sent letters to President Biden and Speaker Pelosi. I sent by email a letter to Speaker Pelosi myself in support of what she was asking her to do. I haven't gotten a response yet, but of course they're quite overwhelmed themselves right now. But I just hope it will have some effect to bring the resources there immediately to come to the rescue of these good people.
This is exactly what we have to do. We have to come to the rescue of these good people immediately. We don't even know, Archbishop Corleone, what that looks like right now, what coming to the rescue looks like when the troops, the military personnel right there on the ground at the Kabul airport and wherever they are, have been set back in their ability to help the people right in front of them. So from here, we feel so helpless. But as you say, in dark and dangerous times on your website, Christ Jesus gives us the courage to hope. So again, Archbishop is leading a prayer service Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific, EucharisticRenaissance.com. Archbishop Corleone, thank you for your time. I know it's extremely full, and you have a lot pressing on your schedule, but thank you for giving us some of it.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you. You're always a beacon of light. At EucharisticRenaissance.com, we want to join that prayer service for those who are in harm's way. Our Americans, the Roots of Peace organization, their Afghan employees, the good work they're doing. Our Lady of Sorrows has more power than any dark forces on earth and anybody can imagine. So pray to Our Lady of Sorrows and also EucharisticRenaissance.com, the power of the Eucharist and making amends for all of the harm and the evils done, as Archbishop Corleone said. That is very powerful. We're going to continue the conversation about the situation on the ground in Afghanistan coming up with a general. I think he's a retired general. Yeah, Brigadier General, retired, coming up next.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Your daily dose of faith, hope, and charity. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logminas. Drew's taking the day off. I'm in for the day. We're covering world news and news in our country. It's a real cross-section of news today. It's been talking about what's been going on in Haiti with relief efforts, and that was very important. Food for the poor and the spiritual needs of those who have been struck by everything back-to-back. You know, hurricane restoration after the last one, and then the earthquake, and then another tropical storm. They are just getting hit one thing after the other. Same is true in Afghanistan. Chaos is not only descending and devolving, but it's being met by more chaos. When today's bombing occurred, in the last count I saw was 12 service members, U.S. service members killed, among other people. It has certainly really set back the efforts to get people out while they're still able. And that timeline has really narrowed when our troops have been told, get out. So let's just hear one clip before my next guest comes on that we have about the devolving chaos in Afghanistan.
Taliban are blocking people on the outside perimeter of the airport and not allowing them through.
President Biden says that there's no harm coming to U.S. citizens or people they're trying to get in, that they're not being beaten by the Taliban or anything else. Can you...
I think that's completely false.
Okay.
That is completely and unequivocally false. Everything that's come out of this administration has been nothing but lies. Right now, our biggest obstruction has not been our ability to extract people, but it's been the U.S. State Department that's been obstructing. We cannot get a single person in the State Department to support us on the diplomatic front. Right now, we different countries that want to take people or have agreed to take people are requesting diplomatic notes from the State Department that when they arrive, 1, 2, 3 will happen. And the State Department keeps telling us, we will not write any notes. We will not give you any support whatsoever. So we're in the middle of diplomatic wranglings, trying to figure out when we go rotate people in, rotate planes in to take them out, where we're going to take them to next destination. So we're in concert talking to...
We have countries that will take them. Why is our State Department not willing to say, yes, you can move them?
Welcome back. Very busy here, shuffling information. It's coming in as we speak right now. What's going on in Afghanistan? So if you didn't think things could get worse at the Kabul airport, you might not know this, but think again. Two bombs went off in this crowded area around a gate into the airport. The latest information is that a dozen servicemen have been killed, 11 Marines and one Navy medic. 15 more have been injured, and many Afghans have also been injured. Apparently, the bombs were from suicide bombers affiliated with ISIS. The Pentagon's putting that information out. There are still at least 1,500 American citizens who need to be evacuated from Afghanistan, and there are an estimated 250,000 Afghans who work with Americans and have visas to get out of the country. However, President Biden so far is sticking by the deadline of August 31st, and that's something that our NATO allies are not very happy with because they still have their own citizens stranded. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska issued a statement this afternoon saying, Mr. President, there is a clear choice before you now. Either rip up the August 31st deadline and defend evacuation routes by expanding the perimeter around the Kabul airport or by retaking Bagram, or leaving our people behind in your retreat. Close quote from Senator Ben Sasse. Darren Gaub is a military retired lieutenant colonel from the Army Air Service. He graduated from Montana State University in 1998 and began a career as an Army aviation officer and spent a year in South Korea, one deployment to North Africa, four deployments to Afghanistan, and one deployment to Central and Eastern Europe. He's the executive director of Restore Liberty at restore-liberty.org. Thank you for coming on today. We really appreciate, Lieutenant Colonel, your time at such a time as this.
Hey, Sheila, thanks for having me on. And yeah, it's a tough thing to talk about, but we definitely have to talk about it to get people to know what's going on.
Well, we absolutely do. So with your expertise, Lieutenant Colonel, why did the U.S. leave Bagram Air Base in the middle of the night without telling the Afghans what we were doing?
You know, I honestly wish I could answer that question with complete details. It shocked me that that happened. I'd spent a couple tours in Bagram. I know the airfield extremely well. One of my jobs was as a planner. And as a planner, you put all kinds of different contingencies in place, and sometimes you just leave them on a shelf, and they don't ever leave the shelf, and that's fine. But one of those is, you know, what we would call the non-combatant evacuation operation, or NEO. And what happens if this scenario occurs? Well, one of the things we always said was the last thing you give up is Bagram Air Base, your strategic foothold in the country. Kabul International Airport is not that, but Bagram was.
Wow.
I wish I could tell you why they left it.
You know, there are so many unanswered questions, and yet the president has, instead of, I don't know how this works, but certainly his advisors and military advisors especially are giving him, you know, timely and updated by the moment advice based on the data and what they're hearing from intelligence sources, what they're hearing from their forces. One imagines that to be the case, and therefore I don't know how this usually works and nor should work in this situation, but one, everybody watching, and what I'm following in the news, Lieutenant Colonel, is it seems to be bipartisan. We can just stay away from it. I mean, criticism is criticism, and it's one thing to criticize, but advice, I mean, so there are those in the Democratic Party and Republican Party in Congress who seem to be calling on him in a bipartisan way to do something differently, to shift off the plan based upon real on-the-ground events unfolding. So what Senator Sasse has called on to either rip up the August 31st deadline and defend evacuation routes by expanding the perimeter around the Kabul airport or by retaking Bagram or leaving the people behind in his retreat if he does stick to the plan. In your knowledge, Lieutenant Colonel, do we have the personnel on the ground right now to do what Senator Sasse said, expand the perimeter around the Kabul airport and retake Bagram?
No, there aren't enough people from what I can see right now to be able to do that. That is a significant area. I've flown over that airport and into it many times. Not only is it just geographically a large space, but when you look at the Kabul environment, the city that it is and what it's made of and how tightly packed it is, it would be a nightmare to try to secure that area.
Wow.
It would take a lot of forces to do it, and we simply don't have those there. You know, and one of the things we always talk about in the military, too, is, and Senator Sasse is right in this, that oftentimes we have a plan, but we have to, at some point, stop fighting that plan and fight the reality of what's happening in front of you.
Well, that's so well put. Stop fighting the plan, because it's one thing to make a plan way further out, further back, and then see the events unfold. Nobody could seem to have foreseen how fast Kabul would fall, how fast, in fact, the retaking by the Taliban would happen. I saw one news report. I don't remember if it was what it was, New York Times, Washington Post, wherever it was, Lieutenant Colonel said, this was going back a couple of weeks ago now, said it surprised even the Taliban. It was so quick and easy to do. But you, Lieutenant Colonel, must have known some of the Afghans who supported American troops with intelligence and other means from your time there. Have you heard anything about whether they can get out?
Yes, I have, actually. And there's a lot of devastating stories buried in there, in that topic. Now, I have people that I've talked to about trying to get out families of 14, 16 people who all have the appropriate clearances and paperwork and everything's in place, and they'll travel hours to get to Kabul to try to leave. Mm-hmm. And they're told that only 8 of the 14 can leave, and they have to pick who has to stay behind. Nobody wants to do that. There's no way you could. As a as a, someone who's part of a family. And there are, we've got a lot of different reports from people on the ground, because we have people that we know there. Everybody in the military has a network, whether you're retired or not. And we get a lot of information about these families who are trying so hard and so desperately to get out. And it's a significant challenge for all of them. And we're doing everything we can. Or those of us who are able to are doing everything we can, but we certainly are not doing everything we can as a nation right now. And that's part of what Senator Sasse was talking about, is you either have to make the decision. You're either all in to get all the Americans and the appropriate Afghans out, mm-hmm. or you're basically showing the world that you're quitting.
And if we weren't out of time, I would want to talk more with you about what the Pentagon can do independent of the president, if anything, but we are out of time, and the chances that this administration might actually do something different to protect those Afghans, given the realities of, you know, the hourly things that are happening there. We are out of time, but you've just called on us all to do what we can. And maybe that means, you know, contacting our members of our government, certainly, and calling on them to do, you know, action. That's where it comes from, the members of government. Lieutenant Colonel, thank you for your time and your knowledge and your insights on what's going on the ground in Afghanistan. We'll stay up with you on that. Thank you.
You know, thank you, Sheila, and I'll be available if you guys need me.
Thank you so much. I want to call on all of you, knowing that the chaplet is coming up. Please, in your prayers, it's a recorded chaplet today, but join your prayers to ours for the American military members we lost today.